So we're fortunate enough that we have the founder of the Hoffman Agency, Mr. Lou Hoffman, the CEO, in London with us. So we thought we couldn't miss that opportunity to jump in the podcast studio and speak to Lou. And our podcast is shaped around the Hoffman-owned online property, the Periodic Table of Business Storytelling, we thought it'd be really interesting to understand how Lou and the agency came to develop that table, how the elements were sourced, and how it came to be, and why it's relevant as a part of our overall approach to storytelling. So welcome, Lou. It's lovely to have you here.
Thank you. Great to be in London.
Yeah, it's lovely to have you here as always, and running around Europe as we do. I've only been with the agency for, 2.5 years now, maybe slightly over that. And I can't remember, was it about then that the periodic table was published in its first instance, or was it a little bit older than that?
Well, that sounds about right, 2-3 years ago, but it's a work in progress and one we've been thinking about for probably 10, 15, 20 years.
Oh, okay. So it's been milling around for that long, and I suppose over that time it's sort of just been shaping in your mind. So at what point did you kind of feel like it crystallized as, actually, you know what, we could do that thing. We could make a periodic table of elements of storytelling.
Yeah, that did take place about 3 years ago. But what I'd like to do is kind of rewind the tape to the very beginning, because the reason this has kind of been in our mind and something I've been thinking about for so long is this idea that if you look across communication consultancies in-house, everyone touts the importance, the value of storytelling. But I felt like there was a dirty little secret that no one wanted to talk about, and that was this idea that storytelling, by the classic definition of a start and end, something going astray in between that needs to be paid off, that's great for movies. It's great for books. It's not so great for B2B communications because our clients don't necessarily want to talk about the bad stuff that happens in their lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And that I think we've had that discussion that the ideal arc around storytelling just doesn't work when you get into a corporate, because as you say, if they've had a disaster in the past, or they've some misfortune or some bad behavior or whatever, they're not going to refer back to that. So I suppose then when you started, how did you start analyzing the stories and the way to tell business stories that then made you start seeing those elements within it? Because some of the elements, and I think we'll get into discussing one or two of the specific elements, they're a little bit sort of counterintuitive or incongruous or different. And so how did you start identifying specific aspects of storytelling that you thought that is an element here?
Yeah, well, what I started to notice, and I do a lot of reading, I'm particularly fond of looking at long form business journalism. So publications like The Economist, Business Week, Fortune. And in the course of looking at how what I consider to be the best nonfiction storytellers on the planet, these journalists, how they were putting together their stories, I noticed that they didn't always have the classic story arc, but their stories were always super interesting. So I started to pay attention to what was making them interesting. And one thing that quickly came to the surface was this this idea of anecdotes, which for our world, particularly in B2B tech, is a bit counterintuitive, where executives that often come from engineering orientations think of anecdotes as being a bit inconsequential, even a bit fluffy. And yet I was seeing this disconnect because I saw how important they were to journalists as they constructed their stories of bringing interest and almost an entertainment value to their stories.
Yeah, and I think we both are fans of magazines like The Economist and Wired, and it is really interesting because when you tune into that use of anecdotes, you go through The Economist and it's almost like 80% of stories start with an anecdote, a sort of setting the scene almost, but it really draws you into the story. And as I say, it sort of sets the context. So when you start getting into the detail of the subject, you've got something that you can relate it to. And that does seem, something that we definitely use within our own, and I think we work with the team to really build into our storytelling for our clients, is find the examples. But I know what you're saying. Sometimes you speak to the clients and they might be engineers or R&D guys, and they're right at the coalface. And those stories, you find those at the end of a long conversation, because you ask a question and say, yeah, that was all really interesting. What's, you know, give me an example. And that's when you get that little right. gold nugget that comes out, which is the, oh, well, there was this time when, and that's the great anecdote. So I guess it's, you know, our skill is having to find those and dig them out of people.
Yeah. So, you know, so what happened was I started to see certain patterns emerge from my own just kind of everyday reading. Like we talked about a second ago, anecdotes. I also started to see that the journalists would often use contrast. And so as I started to see two, three patterns, this led me to take a couple of account coordinators who got the dubious assignment of going through around 200 articles from different business publications and breaking down the content by content type. And then we correlated all that information, and that really is the basis of that periodic story table that we see today. Yeah. You know, anecdotes, contrast, incongruence, protagonist, drama, sausage making.
Yeah, and all these things. I'm going to stop you there, because I think it's one of the things that people, when they look at the periodic table, they naturally gravitate towards some of the weird words in it, and sausage yeah. making is almost the main one that people go, what the hell do you mean by sausage making in storytelling?
Yeah, so even before talking about that, I had when the periodic table first came out, several people suggested to me that it was such an American colloquialism that we should rethink that, and I decided not to, because it became a good conversation piece,
yeah.
you know, almost like an icebreaker.
Yeah, it does.
And so this idea of sausage making goes back to this interpretation in the U.S. of going behind the scenes of how something gets created. So this idea of that if you went to a sausage factory and you saw how sausage was made, it wouldn't necessarily be a pleasant experience or encourage you then to go home and eat a sausage.
Right.
And so that's the genesis of this term, sausage making. And the way we use it is this idea of, you know, a behind the scenes look and why something comes about. And what I find incredibly fascinating when it comes to storytelling in general is a lot of times how something comes about, it can be more interesting than the actual thing.
The end product. Yeah. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And that's, yeah, again, when we are working with clients and we get to talk to people in R&D or people who were around when specific and really innovative changes in technology or products were made, that backstory is really, really interesting, where the inspiration for that stuff comes. So I completely get that. One of the other ones, and we kind of looked at this as one of the themes for our podcast, because I think it does attach itself to that traditional model of storytelling when you said where something goes wrong, and that's lots of brands don't want to point to when things went wrong, but failure's in there as a storytelling as one of the elements in the table. How do you think that companies can use their failures in their communications, and is there a sort of statute of limitations over a failure, whereas it happened far enough back in history that we're happy to talk about it now?
Yeah, that's it's a good question. I always kind of, in my mind, I see failure in two forms: failure big F and failure small F. And the big F failures, you know, we can't really use in our communications. They're too material to company performance, and no executive's going to want to talk about them. But every company goes through situations where things don't go according to plan, and they're not like they're not going to have a material like impact on performance or stock price that we can and should be using, and especially those failures, those things going wrong where enough time has elapsed where the course correction, the resolution, the solution has actually taken place. And so in a way, the risk of talking about something negative, talking about something that's gone astray, there really is no risk. Because yes, you share that happenstance, you share the problem that surfaced or maybe the thing that didn't work out as well as you would have liked, but you know there's a payoff that it was course corrected or solved. And those, I think, are just perfect for what we do, and they're interesting to the outside world.
Yeah, I suppose the point about failure is, as you say, if there's a resolution to it, if you've learned and improved, or you got over that, and took the organization in a positive way because of it, then that's when it's okay to talk about failure, and you should use failure.
No question. Yeah. One of my favorite examples I like to use in our storytelling workshop is this story that UPS, the delivery service, mm-hmm. placed in the Wall Street Journal, and it was on their revamped training program. And UPS was having a lot of problems with, I think, like it was like a 32% washout rate in people that went through this training. And their new program drove that washout rate, the people that failed the training, down to, I mean, don't hold me to these numbers, but I want to say 7 or 8%. So it was tremendous success. But if UPS goes to the Wall Street Journal and they say, look, we want you to write about our new training program. We've got our washout rate down to 7, 8%. No journalist is going to write that story. And the Wall Street Journal certainly isn't going to write that story. But what UPS did is they go, look, our washout rate was terrible. You know, it was 30, 32%. Mm. Now it's down to 8%. Now all of a sudden the journalist has a frame, has context for that failure small f. Mm. And that ends up underpinning a pretty interesting narrative.
Yeah, no, sure. We could sit here, talk all day, go through every element. We're not going to do that. Hopefully our podcast over time will not only highlight each of the elements, but also bring a bit of topical news and context and examples to them. So thanks for putting it together. People can find it online. If you go to our website, www.hoffman.com, it's at the top of the homepage. It's also got its own URL, which I'm going to try and remember now. I think it's business-storytelling.com. Is that right?
You were close.
Okay.
Yeah, it's www.storytelling-techniques.com.
Got it. Okay. Thanks very much for your time, Lee. That's really great.
Sure. Cheers.
Bye.